people said, oh, you got free time. We're going to run you for president. I was really drafted by Greens around the country.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode, we meet the Green Party candidate for president in 2020. Although they haven't elected him to the state's top job, New York voters have gotten to know Howie Hawkins over the years. The Green Party candidate for governor in 2010, 14, and 18, Hawkins has been a regular candidate for various local offices over the years. The retired Teamster, who has lived in Syracuse since 1991, has used his campaigns to highlight issues like economic inequality, the environment, and tax policy, to name a few. With President Donald Trump seeking re-election, will voters entertain what is usually considered a protest vote in 2020? Hawkins covered that and more in an interview with WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley.
Now I'm recently retired Teamster, so got a pension, and people said, oh, you got free time. We're going to run you for president. I was really drafted by Greens around the country.
Why did you decide to go ahead and accept, you know, their desire to have you run?
Well, I have a lot of respect for the people that asked me and looked around and didn't see other Green candidates capable of pulling off a national campaign. None of them have even run a statewide campaign. And so the Greens need a candidate, and so it seemed to fall in my lap.
You are fairly outspoken as a Green candidate. One of the things that you were mentioning even before we went on, you know, tape, is that this country has one of the most difficult ballot access systems in the world. What are you finding as you go state by state?
Well, every state has different election laws. The Greens currently have ballot access in 21 states. That means we have to petition in 30 states, counting the Washington, D.C. So there are 51 jurisdictions. And that's about 1.5 million signatures. And every state has a different start time, deadline, different ways, different forms you got to fill out. So it's very complicated. And then the numbers are just, I mean, this country is off the charts compared to other electoral democracies. Maybe the easiest way, because not every country has a president. They have, you know, proportional and parliamentary systems, running for the national legislature. In New York, you need 3,500 good signatures. You've got to collect them in 6 weeks. And you really need 7,000 because you're going to be challenged. In Illinois, it's over 15,000. In New Zealand, it's 2 signatures. In the UK, it's 10 signatures. In Canada, it's a maximum of 100. Some writings are 50, some are 100, because some of them are really spread out, so they just let them do 50. Germany, it's 200. And then we're in the thousands. And it's the same thing when you're running for national office. So, you know, 1.5 million signatures at $1 a signature is $1.5 million. You know, we got to pay petitioners to go out there and collect these thousands and thousands, really, 1.5 million signatures. So it's really a huge task, and the deadlines, some come early. Arizona is at the end of this month, but the last one is September 4th next year. So you're not even really on all the ballots until the last couple months of the campaign.
Well, we always hear about, you know, we need to change so many things in the election system. You know, this one, though, I don't think many people know about. How does running for president really help, you know, change the election system to make it easier for people to vote?
Well, you get on a ballot, you get a platform, you can raise these issues. And as you go into different states, you can talk about it. But it's a state-by-state thing. One of the things in my platform is we should have one federal standard for federal elections that's reasonable. You know, right here in New York, I just had an op-ed published in the Gotham Gazette in opposition to the proposal from the Democrats, Jay Jacobs, the state chair, appointed by Governor Cuomo, and he proposed increasing the number of votes you need to get running for governor from 50,000 to 250,000 five times in order to get a ballot line. That is aimed directly at the Green Party. I've run three times. The most I got was 184,000. And they're going to report their recommendation, this commission that is was supposed to look at public campaign financing is now saying they're going to make it harder to get a ballot line in this state. So this is an ongoing fight, state by state, 51 jurisdictions. And it's an anti-democratic system. You know, we like to scold other countries about their lack of democracy, but we need to clean our own house.
Any party that's not Republican or Democratic tends to be referred to as a third party. Do you see anything changing for third party and third party candidates in the U.S.?
Well, the goal we have in the Green Party and in my campaign is to appeal to those people who are voting in low numbers, working class people, people of color, young people. And those people think they're apathetic. I've done so much door knocking. These people are alienated. They're not apathetic. I know a guy that he's never registered to vote. He's a Teamster I work with. I tried to get him for 17 years working there to get him to register. And he just said, no, those two parties don't care about me. I'm not going to play their game. But every time there was an issue in the news, he'd come running to me. What do you think? What's going on? You know, he was following it. He just wasn't voting because he felt, you know, none of these parties represent him. So if the Green Party is going to have a future, it's going to be organizing and mobilizing that, you know, about half the population doesn't vote in presidential elections and more in other elections. So that's, you know, how we change the political system, I think, from the Green Party perspective. We get those people engaged, supporting us, and then we have a multi-party democracy. We're the third major party.
Well, Howie Hawkins, you're traveling around the country. We keep hearing about how divided it is, the blue and the red. Do you see it that way? Is it divided? And, you know, do you see that blue-red split? Or is it, you know, a little bit more subtle than that?
It's not subtle at all. It's a class divide. It's the working class people and the struggling middle class people against these elites and the wealthy elites that fund those two major parties. That's the real divide. And the problem is, as we like to say, the bosses got two parties. We need one of our own because we're just not getting represented and covered in the politics we see. So you have two elite factions that, you know, fight over, you know, who's get the spoils. But in the end, they agree, for the most part, on foreign policy. Our economic policies have generated growing inequality for 45 years, whether it was, you know, the Bushes or Clinton and Obama. Not much difference in their economic policies. And that's why we need an alternative. And so that's why I think the divide is more up and down than what they call the left, the Democrats, and the right, the Republicans, who are both, I think, you know, center-left, center-right establishment parties.
Well, the other thing that we can't turn away from basically right now are the impeachment hearings. Is that making voters more receptive to candidates outside of the two major parties? Are they turning to the Green Party and to your ideas, Howie?
I don't think impeachment is driving people to us. You know, my question about impeachment is, why did it take the Democrats so long? I mean, long before this Iran or Ukraine scandal came up, there was the blatant racism of Trump. He told people break laws, you know, like on the border patrol or cops in Long Island, you know, rough them up before you put them in the squad car, and says, I'll pardon you if you get in any trouble. That's lawlessness, abuse of power up and down all over. Plus all the corporate crimes. I mean, his rap sheet goes back decades and it's a mile long. And the emoluments, you know, self-enrichment, using his office for him and his family. I mean, all those things were completely impeachable. And what really frustrated me was, you know, Nancy Pelosi in the House, the speaker saying, oh, we can't impeach, it'll divide the country. This president divides the country every time he opens his mouth. So, you know, that's just what I feel about impeachment. I think, you know, the guy was not qualified. He's violated all kinds of, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors. But I don't think it's driving people necessarily to us. I think people might be paying a little bit more attention now that the hearings are public. So I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out. But, you know, the public, I think, is more and more leaning toward impeachment. The polls show that. You know, but the problem is, I think the guy should be impeached, but the next guy up in line isn't going to be much better. And so we need more than impeachment. We got to change the system.
Howie Hawkins, as president, how would you bring the country back together, and what kind of issue priorities would you move forward with while doing that?
Well, I would bring people together around a program that I got elected on, because it would be a mandate and the people would want it. And I would go to Congress and say, this is why I was elected. You know, if you don't get on board, you know, in 2 years, you could be, you know, out, and we'll get some more Greens in here. And the top three issues, which I consider life and death issues, are the climate emergency. And I was the first candidate to run on a Green New Deal in this country back in 2010, running for governor. The inequality crisis. We now have a 20-year life expectancy gap between our richest and poorest counties. Inequality kills, and it's been getting worse for 45 years, and neither of the two major parties has a program to deal with that. We call for an economic bill of rights. Actually, Roosevelt called for that in 1944 and 1945 in his State of the Union addresses. He asked Congress to enact it. They never have. That's a job guarantee, a guaranteed income above poverty, the right to affordable housing, to comprehensive health care, to a lifelong public education, and a secure retirement. And we have detailed programs for those things. Those are the kinds of things that people, that's the first thing on their minds. You look at the polls, those are the issues, particularly right now, medical bills. You know, so many people at the end of the month, you know, they got to choose between rent, utilities, and groceries, and God forbid you get a medical bill. And, you know, that's as many as half the people in the country. So that's the first issue on their mind. And then there's another issue that's not being talked about by any of the major party candidates, and that's this new nuclear arms race. We've got out of all these nuclear arms control treaties. We're modernizing our nuclear forces, making the strategic missiles hypersonic. That means six times faster, which puts them even more on a hair trigger alert. And we're putting more tactical nukes into conventional forces, as if you can, you know, shoot some tactical nukes off and it won't escalate into a strategic nuclear war that destroys us all. So we're calling for a pledge of no first use, a minimum credible deterrent, so we unilaterally disarm to a minimum credible deterrent, and then on the basis of those tension-reducing measures, go to the nuclear powers of the world and say, we got to get rid of nuclear weapons. There was a treaty adopted by 122 nations 2 years ago in the UN called the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. The campaign for the abolition of nuclear weapons got that through, and they got the Nobel Peace Prize for that 2 years ago, and I doubt there's 1 in 1,000 Americans even knows that. So that's an issue I hope the Green Party, not just our presidential ticket, but our congressional candidates can inject into this campaign. So those are the top three issues that are, you know, we're trying to get covered and addressed.
Up here in the northern New York region, we don't very often get presidential candidates to visit. Why are you in Plattsburgh?
Well, our goal is to get as many votes as we can, and that's, you know, leverage going forward in the political process. And so every vote is equal. So Plattsburgh is as important as New York City as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, what we're talking about also is instead of this electoral college, which means the candidates campaign in a few battleground states and ignore everybody else. They ignore all of us in New York. The Democrats are probably going to win this state. So they ignore New York City as well as Plattsburgh and the whole North Country. We want to see get rid of the Electoral College and have a national popular vote with ranked choice voting. So you rank your choices. So that ends the spoiler problem or the split vote problem. So, you know, if you like the Greens, but you're worried about the Republicans and you think you have to vote the Democrat, well, the ranked choice voting, you could rank the Greens first, the Democrats second, and the Republicans third. And if I don't get a majority in, or if nobody gets a majority in the first round, the last place candidate's votes are transferred to their second choice. So suppose the Greens come in third in that scenario. Most of our voters would probably put the Democrat second. So then the Democrat would, in the end, get the majority. But you could vote for who you wanted to in the first round. So we call it instant runoff voting. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. Instead of the expense of having runoffs, you put your choices right up on the ballot to begin with. And we really need that. The last two Republicans were first elected by losing the popular vote, you know, George W. Bush and Donald Trump. And, you know, the Democrats like to pick on us for spoiling the election. No, it was the Electoral College. Don't pick on us. Join us in changing the system. Let's have a national popular vote with ranked choice voting.
Howie Hawkins, thank you.
Thank you.
And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.